Now, one thing you've probably heard a lot since 2016 is just how divided this country is. There's been a lot of coverage of the partisan divide in the media. Politics been really heated, and social media paints a pretty grim picture, too. But a new study out from the group More in Common says there's actually much more room for common ground among Americans than we might think. Stephen Hawkins is the lead researcher on the group's latest study, Hidden Tribes, which takes a closer look at polarization in the United States. Stephen, thanks a lot for joining us.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we hear this story about polarization a lot, and there's a lot of evidence, at least on the surface. What made you want to dig deeper into this?
We thought that the story of polarization had lots left to be told. Specifically, we thought that there's a lot of psychological underpinnings to what's going on in the United States that hadn't really been surfaced. And we thought that dividing the country into just Democrats, independents, and Republicans, or into demographic groups, white people versus minorities, men versus women, wasn't getting it enough of the picture. So we teamed up with a social psychologist who's based at Yale, and we conducted a really robust study with 8,000 participants who took our online study, and then we followed up with a large number of focus groups and in-depth interviews to really probe under the surface and see if we could get a richer picture of what was happening in our country.
Don't always want to talk too much about methodology, but it's kind of interesting here because you didn't ask the polling questions that people might be used to. Do you vote for candidate A or B? Are you a Democrat or a Republican? Are you for or against this particular issue? How did you go about questioning to dig deeper here?
Yeah, we tried to focus primarily on what are called core beliefs. This is a set of things that are more fundamental to who a person is than their simple attitudes towards the typical political issue of the day. So we ask questions that really get at people's identity. How do people wake up in the morning? Do they think of themselves first as a Christian and as an American, or do they wake up and feel first that they're a person of color and a woman? We wanted to really get a nice sense of the deepest parts of people's psychology. So we ask questions about identity, about people's moral values. We ask questions about their preferred parenting styles. And we use these variables, there are almost 60 of them, together with some questions about their political behavior to get a more fundamental understanding of who people were. And then we used a kind of fancy statistical process called agglomerative hierarchical clustering, and that allowed us to find the patterns in those data so that we could make the groupings that became the seven tribes.
And you found seven different groups, as you say, and those people who we might think of as the polarized electorate, the ones you might think of, I don't know, calling into a political talk show, say, they exist, but they're less than 10% on either edge, the furthest to the left and the furthest to the right. They exist, but they're really not the whole story, you found out.
They're not the whole story. What we found is we have seven groups. Right at the center, we have a group called the politically disengaged. This is about one in four Americans. And there's lots of variety within that group, but these are people who are primarily focused on their day-to-day lives or on other things. They're not really focused on politics, they're not posting about it, and they don't vote very often. And then moving from the center, we have moderate group, we have a passive liberal group, and we have a traditional liberal group. And all of these together form what we call the exhausted majority. And this is a group of people who, they don't agree on everything politically. Some of them say they're Democrats, some of them say they're Republicans, others are indifferent or call themselves independents. But what they do have in common is that they're a little bit more ideologically flexible. They don't think all the same way. They don't read from a script on the left or the right about how problems need to be solved. And they also feel forgotten by the political debate of the day. And I think the most important point about them is that they feel really fatigued by the political partisan bickering of this moment and really are eager for something new and something that's more compromise-oriented, something that isn't as bitter and acrimonious.
And something interesting, on the edges here, you've got progressive activists, devoted conservatives on the opposite end, but then you've got traditional conservatives and traditional liberals, but they aren't really a mirror image of each other. They kind of function differently. Those traditional conservatives, you find, are in many ways more engaged. They're not as frustrated as the traditional liberals. What's going on?
The traditional liberals and the traditional conservatives do have something in common, and that's that they are more or less of the same generation. These tend to be of the baby boomer generation, a little bit older, and they also tend to think of themselves as Americans. They have pride in being American, especially on the conservative side. But where they differ is in their emotions towards the country today, traditional conservatives, this is 19% of the population, these are people who are, will describe themselves as Republicans. They're primarily supportive of Trump. And so this isn't a moment where they feel only frustration at the United States. They also feel like their voices are being heard. They feel as if the country is moving in a positive direction in many ways. And so they're not as frustrated and fatigued by this political moment as the traditional liberals are, who feel very much that the country is headed in the wrong direction. And I think if we had done this study, for instance, in 2009 or 2010, in the heyday of the Tea Party, in the early years of the Obama presidency, we would have defined this exhausted majority group a little differently. And I think the traditional liberals would have been more on the positive side, and the traditional conservatives would have made up part of this exhausted, frustrated majority.
Talking to Stephen Hawkins from the group More in Common about a new report from the group. He's the lead researcher. It's called Hidden Tribes, saying the story of polarization in the United States, there's a lot more going on when you dig in. Stephen, I'll want to dig into some of these groups more, but I want to ask a big picture question. As you say, a lot of these people are in this exhausted majority. What can we do with this information? What can we do to engage them and maybe depolarize, maybe get along a little better?
Mm-hmm. I think the first thing we have to do is recognize that there's really a problem in our political discourse. We asked a lot of questions about this in our study, and one of the dynamics that was really striking to us was that people both recognize that there is a problem of hate speech in our country and it needs to be addressed, and that there's a problem of political correctness, of policing speech, and of people taking offense very easily. These dynamics are really difficult to navigate for most people, and it's causing them to retreat from politics. It means they don't want to post online, they don't want to engage in the conversation at work or over the dinner table with their family at Thanksgiving. And that is a fundamental obstacle to us being able to work together, because when we're not having those conversations, we're not seeing the best in each other, and we're free to draw on these caricatures, these kind of cartoon versions of the other side that make them out to be worse than they are. I think the second thing we need to do is recognize that there really are fundamentally different worldviews, different cultures and stories that we're telling on the left and the right. On the left, there's a story that's about allowing the individual to prosper and flourish and have a lot of freedom, that we need to be careful about authority because too much authority is suffocating and it's oppressive, and we need to be respectful and focus on freedom and equality. That's a good story. On the right, there's a story that says, let's be careful. Individuals left to their own devices can be selfish, they can make mistakes, and they need good leadership, they need strong families, they need strong culture, they need religion, they need education to bring out their best selves. Self-discipline is very important, family is very important. And those are two stories that both have degrees of merit and need to be told at the same time, and instead they're vilified, the worst versions of these stories are used to characterize each other, and we don't hear what each side is trying to bring to the table.
I want to jump to this group, 1 in 4 people, as you say, the politically disengaged. And I've heard over the years people from the left and the right saying, there's all these people out there, we know they agree with us, if we just activate them, we're going to win every election. It's way more complicated than that. What did you learn about this quarter of Americans who fall into this politically disengaged category?
Well, this is a group that is disproportionately young. The group that's most likely to have children under the age of 18 that they're still raising. This is a group that includes a lot of people who are lower income, who have less education. For them, politics and national stories, a little bit of a luxury for their time. They're more focused on raising their children, making sure they get to their shift at work, making sure they finish their degree. And so they're not as engaged in politics. They're focused on other things. They're also a group that's quite discouraged, and they don't see they see politics as both intimidating on the one hand because it's complex and it's a foreign world in some ways, but also as a place that is frustrating because they don't see a route for their engagement. They don't see a payoff for their participation in politics. This is also a group that is a bit prone to conspiratorial thinking. We asked some questions in our study that gauge people's propensity to believe in stories about conspiracies at a grand scale, and this is a group that gravitates towards those as well. So it's a low information group. They don't with regards to politics, and they're not very active politically in across the board. So they're not thinking about politics, they're not watching it on TV as much, they're not posting about it on social media, and they're not voting very often either.
We're talking about polarization in the United States with Stephen Hawkins, lead author of a new study called Hidden Tribes. He's with the group More in Common. It dug beyond the left-right debates this study did and found a lot of different groups of people in the United States, seven of them to be precise. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like the extremes on both ends of the political spectrum get too much attention? Do you feel like your views are left out, like a middle ground is left out sometimes? Do you identify with one of the groups you've heard our guests talk about? Do you feel like, hey, yeah, I am in that politically disengaged group? Tell us why you don't feel like politics is part of your life. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Stephen Hawkins. He's part of the group More in Common, which is out with a new study looking at American identity and political polarization. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel it? Do you feel like we're more politically polarized in this country than other points in your life, in our history? Do you have a hard time talking about anything vaguely political? You don't want to do it because you're worried that you're going to start a fight with someone on one side or the other. And do you feel like when you look at the politicians out there, the parties out there, are they talking to you? Are they speaking for you? Or do you feel like they're missing your perspective? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Stephen, you talk a little bit in the piece about distrust of the media among groups across the political spectrum. It varies, but do you think there are some lessons for how those of us in the media talk about these issues?
Well, it's a bleak picture. I don't know that I have much that's going to encourage you from this conversation. One of the things we found was that there's a lot more alignment about who are the bad media than there are about who are the good media. So we asked about, for instance, MSNBC and about Fox, and the conservatives are sure that MSNBC is biased, and 9 out of 10 agree on this. They don't completely agree that Fox is worth listening to. And the reverse is true among the progressive activists for Fox. They completely think it's biased, and they have mostly positive views towards MSNBC. We also found that there's some relevance to generation. The traditional liberal group, which is, again, a little bit older, more of the baby boomer generation, they still have a little bit of confidence in the media and in our political institutions more generally. They're less pessimistic, and so they're probably a key audience for traditional media. And you know, we asked about a lot of different issues. Specifically, we asked about race and social justice, immigration, sexual harassment, sexual assault, and we asked whether people thought that these issues were being captured well in the media, or whether there was bias in the way that they were being spoken about. And on every single issue, we found that a majority of Americans said that the mainstream media, and that was the term we used, had bias in the way that they presented these issues. And I think it's a really difficult challenge to face, and it doesn't help that the more niche media that's more oriented towards one set of ideologies or the other is likely to criticize their own side of the aisle if they don't turn in their favor in their coverage of the stories.
Let's go to our callers now. Gail is with us in Black River Falls. Gail, hello.
Hello.
What do you think, Gail?
Well, I travel a lot for work, and in the past, you did not sit next to anybody and talk about anything serious. You didn't talk religion, race, or politics. But now I can be sitting next to somebody for 3 hours, get off of that plane, and not know if they're from the right or the left. We only agree that we don't trust the government to do anything.
Okay, Gail, thanks for the call. So I don't know if that's the common ground you're hoping for, Stephen, but a common concern, a worry about the effectiveness, the operations of our government.
Yeah, I think that's the exhausted majority speaking there, just a fatigue with politics, a frustration at what's happening in Washington, D.C., and not enthusiastic about the left or the right. I'm sure there's a lot of people who could agree on that.
Thanks for the call, Gail. We'll go next to Jay on the line in Green Bay. Jay, hello.
Hello.
Well, what did you want to bring up, Jay?
So I'm a trans woman, and the memo that was recently released basically stated that the administration doesn't believe that we deserve civil rights. So my question is, how do we bridge this gap of complacency where you have people on the right side that are not acting on it, ignoring this very important issue to people on the left side? And it's, you know, far ranging from both the traditional conservatives to the extreme conservatives.
Jay, thanks for the call. So these political issues that, in Jay's case, say will affect their life in a very significant way.
There's a really big gap here, I think, on a lot of questions that have to do with gender roles and that have to do with sexuality. On the conservative side of the spectrum, and that would include the devoted conservatives and the traditional conservatives, they're primarily drawing their moral compass with questions related to gender and sexuality from a biblical worldview, which doesn't have much to say to support transgender identity. And so I think there's a lot of conversations that need to be had in order to bring that bring a common understanding on that issue for sure.
Jay, thanks a lot for calling in. Stephen, I want to talk about how political parties navigate all this. We hear in primary campaigns, often moderate candidates are not rewarded for being moderate. In general elections, we hear the mantra, you have to rally the base, appeal to the base, your core supporters. Is that part maybe of what leaves the exhausted majority out of the political discussions?
Without a doubt. There was a piece that came out today written by Cass Sunstein, a renowned professor from Harvard, about our study. And in it, he wrote that the real problem isn't tribalism, it's partyism. And that was one of his main points, that there are institutionalized mechanisms in the parties that incentivize and reward the behavior of being more partisan and being more ideological rather than of seeking common ground. And that's absolutely true. It's true from the level of the way that congressional districts are drawn by parties, the way that political primaries and caucuses are run, all the way through to the way that fundraising happens at a national level. There's structures across the country, across the political system in the country, that reward that ideological behavior as opposed to seeking common ground. And that's certainly a big set of the drivers that have brought us to this point.
Talking to Stephen Hawkins, lead researcher on the study Hidden Tribes, a project of the group More in Common, looking at political polarization in the United States. I want to talk to a group, and this is a group that sometimes feels mythical, again, from my perspective, hosting a political call-in show, the moderates. They are out there.
They are out there. They are 15% of Americans, according to our study. They tend to be... of an older generation. These are people who are politically involved. They vote in local elections. But they split right down the middle on a lot of questions, whether it's on immigration or questions about social justice. One thing that's interesting about them is even though they split between being Democrat, being Republican, or independent in the way that they behave and they identify, they do have, as an older generation, a bit of reservation about the direction that our country is moving in culturally. There's not a sense that the youngest generations have really landed on great ideas and are moving forward with them to make the country a better place. There's some concern that things are getting worse, that the family structure in particular is something which is eroding to the detriment of our country. And so the moderates can be a little bit more socially conservative, a little bit more hesitant, but they are right down the middle when it comes to a lot of the major policy questions and debates that happen in our country.
You've mentioned generational differences a couple times. Where do we see the most older Americans concentrated? Which groups are proportionally younger out of these seven tribes?
Mm-hmm. This will probably follow a lot of people's experience. The devoted conservatives and traditional conservatives, as well as the traditional liberals, are the older generations. Again, I'm speaking on averages here. There are older people in every group. And the younger generations are better represented among the passive liberals, the politically disengaged, and the progressive activists. So one way of thinking about it is if you're young, you tend to either opt out of politics or become quite progressive. And if you're older, you tend to be either you lean liberal or you're quite conservative and religious. Those are the kind of patterns that we saw to simplify it.
Now, you could look at this report, Stephen, and say you got a couple groups on either side. They're not going to talk to each other. You got a bunch of people who feel disconnected. They're giving up on politics. You could read this and be pretty pessimistic. I understand you see some reasons for hope here. What are they?
Well, 77% of Americans think that our differences aren't so big that we can't work together. And more than two-thirds of Americans think that, or they want their side to listen and compromise rather than to just stand and fight. And, you know, there's a lot of frustration in the country right now. It's not a positive, optimistic emotion. It is a negative emotion. It is anxiety and frustration and fear. But that fear, if channeled correctly, could bring about a willingness to behave differently, to think differently, to challenge ourselves, to listen to perspectives that we don't always hear. And so I see reason to be hopeful, both because of people's a willingness to compromise, and because that people aren't all as invested in their political identities as people are on the wings, but also because there's a broad recognition that we are at a low point. A lot of people told us this was the lowest point in their lifetimes in terms of how divided the country has felt. And as a result, they are eager to hear from new voices and hear new ideas.
Stephen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Stephen Hawkins is the lead researcher on the study Hidden Tribes, a project of the group More in Common, looking at polarization in the United States today and digging in more into the details of what we think about our political world.